பூர்ணமத் பூர்ணமிதம் பூர்ணாத் பூர்ணமுதச்யதே பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவாவசிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. Now we are going to the third chapter, eighth Brahmana. There are two Gargi Brahmanams here. This is the eighth one, which is supposed to be more important. Now the third chapter is a long dialogue between a number of great sages on the one hand and the Ajnanavalkya on the other. Ashwala, Arthabhaga, Bhujyu, Ushastha, Kahola, Gargi, Vidatha. These are the sages. In the eighth chapter, in the eighth Brahmanam of the third chapter, Gargi returns. She had already appeared in the sixth Brahmanam, but now again she comes. And she continues her dialogue with Ajnanavalkya. அத்த வாஜிட்னரி உவாச்ச பிராமணா பகவந்தோ ஹந்தாஹமிமம் தௌ பிரஸ்னோ பிரக்ஷாமி தௌ சேன்மே வக்ஷதி நவை ஜாது யுஷ்மாகம் இமம் கச்சி பிரம்மோத்யம் ஜேதா இதி பிருச்ச காகி. சோ காகி கம்ஸ் டு தி கோர்ட் ஆஃப் ஜனகா அண்ட் டெல்ஸ் தி ஷி அட்ரெஸஸ் தி கிரேட் பண்டிட் கிரேட் ஸ்காலர்ஸ் assembled, including Ajnanavalkya. Look here, learned men. She tells the sages, I am going to ask Ajnanavalkya two important questions. Now, if he is able to answer these questions, then be sure you can never defeat him in a debate, in a dialogue. This is a kind of dialogue between a number of saints and sages on the one hand, including Gargi, and Ajnanavalkya on the other. They are putting questions to Ajnanavalkya. So Gargi says, I am going to put two very important questions and be sure that none of you will be able to confront him in a debate if he is able to answer these questions. So other pandits, brahmanas, they all right, go ahead Gargi. Yajnavalkya also gave his permission. Now Gargi begins her dialogue. Sa hovaja aham vaitva Yajnavalkya yada kashyo va vaideho va ugramutro ujjyam dhanuradijyam kutva do banavanto சுபத்னாதி வியாதினோ ஹஸ்தே கிருத்வா வாதிஷ்டே இவமேவாகம் த்வாத்வாபியாம் பிரஸ்னாபியாம் உபோதஸ்தாம் தௌ உமே ப்ரூஹீதி ப்ருச்சகாகீதி. சோ ப்ரூஹி ஐ கோயிங் டு டெல் யூ. சோ யாஜ்ஞவல்க்யா செட் ப்ருச்சகாகி. ஆல் ரைட், கோ அஹெட் யாஜ்ஞவல்க்யா செட். லுக் ஹியர், ஐ அம் கோயிங் டு ஆஸ்க் யூ டூ க்வெஸ்சன்ஸ். அண்ட் She has got a very high opinion about how formidable she is. So she describes what a terrible question she is going to ask. So you will find it here. Now, there were some great famous soldiers in those days. The king of Kashi, the king of Vidheha, the famous soldiers, so maybe knights, emperors who were famous for their red military prowess. They are well-known archers. They have put arrows on their bows and they are aiming their arrows at their enemies with sharp arrows. Similarly, I am standing in front of you with two sharp arrows. These two terrible questions. Now you answer me. This is Gargi's statement. And Gargi said, all right, you ask.
ऋषि आसत अस्ति
सा उवाच यदूर्धम याज्ञवल्क्य दिवत् यदवा पृथिव्या यदंतरा द्यावा पृथिवी इमे यद्भूतं च भवच्च भविष्याचेत्याचक्षति कस्मिंस्तदोदं च प्रोदं च
इज अ बिगिनिंग नाउ व्हाट इज दैट रियलिटी विच इज बियॉन्ड द हेवन्स एंड बिलो द अर्थ and in between and it is called past, present and future. Where is that sutram it is called? Where is that reality built? Where does it exist? Now remember, she continues this as a very long chapter. And we don't have time to go through all those details. Now we are concerned with Yajnavalkya's answer. So Yajnavalkya gives his answer. He gives through different stages. First he says, there is this Sutra, Hiranyagarbha Sutra, the cosmic energy. Then there is that the monotheistic creator God who understands, who decides to create all this. And beyond that there is the absolute impersonal principle called Atman. Now you have to remember a few things here, because otherwise we will have a lot of missing links, so I want to fill up those gaps because it's a long chapter, very long chapter. In Vedantic tradition, we evolve in our spiritual life, and as we evolve, our understanding of the absolute reality also evolves. So there are five levels of evolution of the absolute reality of Godhead in Vedic literature in general. Pantheism, polytheism, monotheism, henotheism and monism. There are six states. At one stage we equate this wonderful nature, the empirical universe, with God. It's called pantheism. For your information, those of you who have read Emerson's books, you find Emerson was more or less a pantheist. So, of course, there is also an element of pantheism. Pantheism equates the empirical universe with God. In pantheism, you conceive of an inherent reality behind this empirical universe. So it goes a little deeper. So, and then there is polytheism. In polytheism, you conceive of a God principle behind these individual natural phenomena. There is a divine principle that functions, that operates, that's behind the function of the various natural phenomena. And in monotheism, you think of a creator God, a supreme God principle, a God with name and form and attributes, who is a presiding deity of the different other deities, other gods and goddesses. And in monism, you still go beyond, you conceive of the absolute reality as one immanent, impersonal principle that is present in everything. That is present everywhere. Now, at the highest level, this Brahman, at the highest absolutistic level, this Brahman is sometimes described as Aksharam. Aksharam is that absolute principle, Brahman or Atman, which is present in everything, which is also omnipresent. So as I said in the earlier class,
the highest metaphysical discussion takes place in various Upanishads with slight differences. Various methods and various imageries and illustrations are used, sometimes parables are used in various Upanishads. This is one problem with the Vedantic tradition. In Vedantic tradition, you'll be surprised, this Vedantic tradition was preserved not by academic philosophers, but by great traditional scholars who studied this for 30 years, 40 years, doing nothing else, mind you. If you study architecture, engineering, medicine, little homeopathy, hatha yoga, also little Vedanta, you may study little Vedanta, but only little of Vedanta does. This great tradition, you'd be surprised to know, you should know a little bit of Indian history. In all these thousands of years, these traditions were preserved through oral tradition by different sages and saints. And there were different gotras, different lineages of these saints who lived in different parts of India. And they used different imageries and different illustrations to teach these Vedantic principles. Sometimes there will be some complexities that you will understand only when you study from a traditional scholar. Because in the universities, there is not enough scope to go through all these complexities, all these intricacies. University education is a matter of a few years when you focus on certain things with an intention of writing a thesis, and there is a matter. But in traditional learning, they start when they are 5 years, 6 years, and continue for at least 25, 30 years. So practically it's a matter of giving one's whole life to this kind of learning. So you find different prakriyas, different methodologies, different schools of philosophical discussions and dialogues used. So here this is special, is a new approach called Akshara. This, in this context, Brahman is described as Akshara. In another Brahman, it's called Andaryami Brahmana, it's called the seventh chapter, it's called Andaryami Brahmana, where Atman is described as the indweller in everything. To give an example, I can give one example. In the seventh Brahmana of the same chapter, third chapter, there's a dialogue, of course, not Gargi, but another great sage in Yajnavalkya. Now, Yajnavalkya described the same reality. Ye prithiviyam tishtan, prithiviyam antaraha, yam prithivina veda, yasya prithivi shariram, ye prithiviyam antaro yamayadi, eshota atma antadhyami amrtaha. Then the final conclusion is this. This reality, the God whom you are seeking, the Brahman that you are seeking, that it is within your own heart. It is indweller, the indweller within yourself. Now to explain this, Yajnavalkya, see, look at these mantras. Yajnavalkya uses some illustrations. Ye prithiviyam tishtan, this antaryami, this indweller, this consciousness, this atma, this immanent principle, it is existing on this earth. If you tell somebody God exists on earth, they mean these mountains, valleys, the pine trees, all these are gods and goddesses. So to refute, to deny that misinterpretation, the Upanishad says, prithivya antara. This Atman, this indweller, this immanent principle, it exists on earth, but it exists within the earth. So you can't say these trees and mountains and valleys are Atman. No. So it exists within. In that case, you may say, well, the gold mine, gold, iron, bauxite, all exist within earth. Iron, coal, everything. So God and goddesses. To deny that possibility, the Upanishad says, a prithvina veda, but the earth doesn't know of this.
It is not part of earth. Yes, prithvi shariram. This earth is only a vehicle, an instrument through which that Atman manifests. Now you cannot say God is a tree and mountain, or that is iron or gold. So the Upanishad says, "Ya prithviyam tishtan," it exists on earth, it is everywhere. But then, "Ya prithviyam antaram," it is within earth. "Ya prithvina velya," but earth doesn't know it. Then, "Yasya prithvi sharidam," of that Atman, this earth is only a body, a vehicle, an instrument for his expression. It exists within this earth, within everything. So existing within as the immanent principle, antaryami, the immanent principle, the interior principle, in everything it controls, regulates the whole entire creation. And remember, this Atman is within you. So, like that, the Upanishad continues in the same illustration continues till 23rd verse. This is only third verse for 19-20 verses. This continues. Absolutely, this Atman exists in earth, enjoying water, but it exists within water. Water principle is only an instrument for his expression. It exists in fire. Fire doesn't know it. Fire is only an expression of this Atman. Antariksha Krishna. It exists in Antariksha. I mean the middle region. It exists in air. Yo Vayu Krishna, Vayu Antarakayam, Vayu Naveda Yasava. Yasi Vayu Shariyam, Yo Vayu Antaro Yamedi. Like that, the Dividishtan, like that. The verses continue. Final act, what happens? The Upanishad takes all possible entities that you can conceive of at the empirical plane, at the gross plane, and tells you this Atman exists within all these things, but of this Atman, the entire empirical creation is only an expression, a vehicle for its manifestation. This is the principle. I'm just giving an example of another line of description of the same principle. Now coming back to Gargi Brahmanam, Yajnavalkya continues in the third chapter, 8th Brahmanam, 9th verse. Before this, there is another aspect that Yajnavalkya makes clear. You know, Gargi asked a question on a subject which is really beyond description, beyond explanation. Because this Aksharam Brahman is the absolute spiritual reality which is beyond description. If you describe anything, then it cannot be infinite. Suppose you are going to give I am going to give you a complete description of God. Then God becomes so small that you can describe Him. So what is within words, within definition, within the framework of definition or description or explanation is limited. The unlimited, the infinite is always beyond description, beyond words, beyond any kind of answer. See, Gargi knows that. Gargi knows that she has asked a question, the answer to which cannot be really given in words. So if Yajnavalkya immediately starts giving a long exposition of this Akshara Brahman, it means Yajnavalkya doesn't know that it is beyond description. Somebody tells you, "I am going to give you a complete length and weight and height of God. God is 10 feet, 300 pounds. Then you can be sure that fellow may know everything except God. So
It's called Vipratipatti Dosha. So, Vipratipatti Dosha means Yajnavalkya doesn't even know that God is beyond description. That's why he is going about giving a detailed description in answer to this question. But suppose Yajnavalkya says, well, I don't know, because then, you know, it is called Apratipatti Dosha. Means Yajnavalkya will make himself a fool in the huge assembly of great learned pandits and philosophers, including Gandhi. Certainly not a very great compliment for a man like Yajnavalkya. But Yajnavalkya was too shrewd to be trapped by Gandhi. So what Yajnavalkya says is, Sahovaja edadvaita daksharam Gandhi brahmana abhivadanti. Yajnavalkya doesn't say, I'm going to give you a detailed explanation of this akshara. He says, learned men talk like this. So, Yajnavalkya cannot be blamed as a person who is going about giving a long description of the absolute, indescribable, non-definable reality. At the same time, Yajnavalkya will not admit that I don't know answer to this. In that case, Apratipatti means ignorance. Adhaya Vipratipatti, Yajnavalkya doesn't know the reality, that this reality is beyond description. That's why he is trying to describe. Yajnavalkya gives complete answer, but he says, it's not my view. Some learned men talk like this. And he gives a long description. So Gargi understood. She had met somebody who is more than her maths. So, Sahovaja edadvaita daksharam Gargi brahmanaha abhivadanti. Learned men, sages and saints, who have learned and experienced all this, they say that this aksharam is asthuvilam, it is not gross. I don't know, it is not subtle. It akrasu, it is not short, adirgam, it is not long. And then, it is alohidam, it is not red. Asneham, it is not greasy. Achayam, it is not a shadow. Atama, it is not darkness. Avayu, it is not air. Anakasam, it is not akas, it is not the infinite sky. Asangam, it is totally detached. Arasam, it has no rasa, no taste. Agantam, it has no smell. Ajashushkam, means it has no eyes. Asrotam, it has no ears. Avang, it has no vagindriya, means the sense of speech. Amanaka, it has no mind. Atejaskam, it is not in the nature of prakasha, it is not just light. Apranam, it is not prana. Like that, all possible descriptions are denied in Yajnavalkya's definition. This particular method of describing the absolute reality is called Nishedha Mukhalakshanam Vakya. Means, you try to explain the absolute reality by disconnecting its connection with anything that is normally known. So, if you tell somebody, well, don't worry about God, don't worry about Brahman, he cannot describe. It won't make any sense. Because already we have our own understanding of many things based on our own evolution. So, we sometimes believe God is one who creates this world, who sustains. God is kind. That's fine. But one problem, if you say, well, now I have given you a complete description of God. God is who creates this world. His compassion. That's all. Nothing more. That is, God becomes so small that you can put him within the framework of a few words. So to deny that possibility, to emphasize the non-definable, the indescribable, the inexplicable nature of the absolute reality, all possible attributes and descriptions and name and qualifications are denied. So this should be understood. There's a very interesting method in the worship. There's one method of describing the absolute reality. Either you have to say Brahman is everything. Brahman is everywhere, omnipresent, immanent, transcendental. Or you have to say this absolute reality is not these tangible things of a few days or a few moments. This absolute reality is not like this mic, did not exist before you somebody manufactured this mic system, public address system, because it did not exist 100 years back. It must have been in the form of an iron or that. Maybe after 100 years it won't exist. So what does it mean? It exists only for 100 years. But then these things which exist, which come into existence in the past, exist for some time, as earth may exist for millions of years, and insert maybe for a few minutes or seconds. They are within the framework of time, space and causation. So to deny or to emphasize the point that the absolute reality is beyond definition, beyond limitation, beyond anything that is finite, Yajnavalkya denies all possible limitations in the absolute reality. That's all. Now the discussion will continue. And then Natadasnadi Kinchana. Natadasnadi. That Atman doesn't eat anything. That is a literal translation. What do you mean? No. Atman doesn't eat food, but you are able to eat food because Atman is immanent person in you. That's the idea behind. Atman doesn't walk, doesn't drive a car, but you are able to drive a car because this consciousness, this Atman, this internal spiritual principle is present in us. That's why we are able to think, we are able to meditate, we are able to look beyond the empirical, beyond the finite things of this world. Just that's the idea behind. And then, Yajnavalkya gives another example. Edas Siva Aksharasya Prashasane Gagi Surya Chandramaso Vidrugautishtha. This is a very, very interesting description in the Upanishads. Yajnavalkya says, because of this Aksharam, this Atman, this Brahman, everything in this world exists. If you look at the skies, the mountains, the sun, the moon, the galaxy, the Milky Way, the stars, everything, you can see behind this phenomena an inherent rhythm, a sequence, a harmony. See, look at the whole universe. The planets have their own gravitational pull. So if you analyze the whole universe, you can see an inner unifying, harmonizing, synthesizing, connecting thread, a principle behind the apparent chaos. A skeptic may look around and see nothing behind this. Everything is different from everything else. Everything is disconnected. But from a spiritual point of view, from a metaphysical point of view, you see an inherent unifying thread that is an invisible harmonizing principle behind the whole creation. In Vedic language, in Rigveda, it is called a rhythm. There are three terms that you find in the Rigveda Samhita. Rhythm, Satyam and Dharma. Three principles you find. The commentators, the Sayana, Mahidhara and other commentators, Veda, Bhashya, they have given detailed description of this phenomenon. So one is Satyam. Satyam is the philosophical metaphysical principle that preserves the entire existence. Satyam is the absolute eternal philosophical principle. Or Satyam is the word used to call that dimension of the absolute reality which functions as the absolute metaphysical spiritual principle.
Rhythm is that harmonizing, synthesizing, unifying principle behind the whole cosmic existence. That, see, for example, if you cut down the trees, you suddenly you are inviting a kind of ecological imbalance in nature. You do any act of violence against the ecological or the empirical, anything, it always creates some repercussion, not always positive. And dharma is applied ethical principle. The same reality, when it is in its philosophical metaphysical dimension, is called satyam, the absolute truth. In its ethical dimension, is called dharma. Dharma here means that dharini iti dharma. Dhrutava means that it preserves, that maintains the entire cosmic existence. And rhythm is that what you call rhythm, you know, R-H-Y-T-H, that there's a sequence, there's a harmonious sequence in seasons, in time, in different natural phenomena. That's what Yajnavalkya is referring to here. Edasyavaksharasya prashasane gargi surya chandramaso vidrugau tishtana. A real philosopher can look at the sky and the sun and moon, the entire natural phenomena, and can see, well, all these things function according to certain predetermined harmonious principles, which shows there's higher intelligence behind this apparent chaos. So Yajnavalkya says, Edasiva Aksharasya Prashasanegaki. This Akshara is Antaryami, the immanent principle, the omnipresent reality. Because of its precedent, because of this that reality, the sun and the moon, they are kept in their respective positions. And again, Edasiva Aksharasya Prashasanegaki, Deva Prithivyu, Idade Dishtana. So also, the earth and the celestial regions, they all exist because this higher spiritual principle is the within and the antaryami. As I said, you know, maybe if you travel along the road of physics, one day we may reach this goal. But we should be able to see a connecting thread. If you take every bit of sand from the ocean and try to count, thinking that each sand grain is different from each other sand grain, there will be no end to anything. But if one can think of what could be the common connecting principle behind the entire cosmic existence, one day perhaps scientists may be judging. Because of this Akshara, this Brahman, different time units like years, months, seasons, fortnights, Ardhamasa means, days and nights, all these are existing because of this higher principle, which presides over all this. So, because of this higher principle, everything moves according to certain harmonious sequence and principles. ഏതസ്യവാക്ഷരസ്യ പ്രശാസനേ ഗാർഗി ததோ மனுஷிய பிரசம்சந்தி யஜமான தேவா திவ்யம் பித்ரு அன்வாயத்தா.
ஸ்ரீராஜ்யாங்கே கண்டினியூஸ், ரிவர்ஸ் ஃப்ளோ இன் டிஃபரெண்ட் டிரெக்ஷன்ஸ் ஃப்ரம் த மவுண்டன்ஸ். பீப்புள் கிவ் gift. I here for Yajnavalkya is striking a very important point which we can understand today. People who are very rich, fabulously rich, and may have made money not through proper means perhaps in many cases, when they reach a particular stage of affluence, they feel like giving away a few billions of dollars, starting a foundation, millions of dollars, because they have some the conscience, something they want to do. So then we think, well, this money is not going to last long, because every day we see human beings dying and they don't take the huge wealth around with them. So what is going to happen to me? What am I going to do when I die? Because all the big bank balance won't accompany me, the checkbooks won't accompany me. So what is there after death? Immediately they start giving away, starting a foundation, giving away charities, helping the Ebola victims in Africa, or AIDS victims and earthquake victims, and so on. Now what is the real cause of this? They feel that by doing this, they are making a spiritual deposit. They are making a deposit, not in terms of money, but in terms of good actions and results, which will benefit them sometime, somewhere after their death. So in many cases, this is what is happening. So Yajnavalkya says, this guiding cosmic principle, it's called the absolute reality, the Atman. It is not visible. So you can't feel its presence if you look at human life just as a journey from crown to grave. But if you look beyond the grave, there is something that is invisible now, which is going to exist even after death. And when you do a good deed, a meritorious deed, that's why you know it is called Etasivaksharasiprasasanegagi Tadadho Manishyaga Prasamsanti. If you give donation, if you give gift, if you give charities, people praise you, they recognize you, they appreciate you because you are doing something good for the good of others. If there is no God, then what is the foundation of ethics and morality in this world? It's an absolute question that arises. Swami Vivekananda addresses this problem in maybe in Practical Vedanta. The infinite oneness of the soul, the eternal sanction of all morality, all ethics, and all good actions. There is one immanent, omnipresent reality present in everything, everywhere. And that will convince us that the whole humanity is one spiritual family. We cannot hurt anyone without hurting ourselves. We cannot do harm to another person without eventually harming ourselves, because we and other are one. So this idea of unity and oneness of creation, of humanity, that is, the whole human family is one, is the ethical foundation of this same spiritual philosophy. So, for those of us who can look at nature, nature will teach us that there is something beyond itself. This higher intelligent principle, which is not visible, but very obvious for the thinking person. That there is something, this higher reality, an immanent reality, in whose presence the entire cosmic life moves according to certain well-regulated principles and ideas. Otherwise, we may stumble upon accidentalism, or naturalism, or predeterminism. Maybe scientists will tell you, we don't have to look for a cause or for a higher intelligent principle behind it. Scientists may tell you, because it's nature.
But if you ask the question, why should it be nature, why can't nature be something different? There's no answer. So those who believe in Vedanta will tell you there is an inherent principle which brings about a harmony, a sequence, a symphony behind all this apparently chaotic phenomena. In fact, this is the beginning of human search for God. But the problem is, if you think God creates this world in a particular day, in a particular time, and said, you should do this, otherwise I shall punish you. If you don't do this, I shall punish you. If you do this, I will send you to heaven. Then only the scientists will start revolting. That's the main problem. So here, Jnanamukhya becomes very rational. That's the uniqueness, the scientific aspect of Vedanta. Vedanta takes you from effect to cause. Vedanta doesn't begin discussion with the cause itself. God one day sat on a throne and created this world. That's Vedanta doesn't say. Vedanta looks at creation as you find them around you when you open your eyes. You see all these mountains and valleys, sun and moon, time, units, seasons, years. You find that Jnanamukhya refers to all this. Eta Siva Aksharasya Prashasanikadi Surya Chandramaso Vidhato Tishtadaha Dhyava Prithivyu Vidhate Tishtadaha. And so on. The earth, the celestial regions, and the sun, the moon, all these show, they point to one higher supreme principle. So from effect to cause, that is the rational inquiry Vedanta. If you look around and see so much of harmony, so of course if you look beneath and beyond the apparent chaos, if you look at the surface, then everything is detached from everything else. There is no sequence, no harmony. You don't see any intelligent principle. If you see, there are so many problems in the world. God is so good and kind. Why can't He give, can He create a very wonderful world where everyone gets food, drinks, the social security, Medicare, insurance, everything? Why should there be homeless people? Why should there be war? Why should there be violence in human minds, human actions? Why should there be undesirable things? If you think of God who sits somewhere and creates His world, then you have to ask all these questions. But if, on the other hand, if you study your inquiry from effect to cause and trace it, and you start tracing from effect to cause for a fundamental principle, then you can see one cosmic, inherent, spiritual principle existing. That's what Yajnavalkya calls Eda Siva Aksharasya Prashasanam Gargi, etc. So, then Yajnavalkya continues his discussion. And he says, this Brahman, this Atman cannot be seen, but it is a seer. It is drashta, but it is not drishyam. It cannot be heard, but is the one who hears everything. It cannot be thought about, but is the one that thinks about everything. It cannot be known, but is the knower of everything. So what does it mean? Whatever you see with your eyes is relative. Whatever you see, whatever you hear about with your ears is limited. Whatever you can think of is limited by your thought. Whatever you can fully understand, cognize, is limited by your intellect. But this Atma is infinite. Therefore, it is a seer, it is a hearer, it is a thinker, the knower. It is not the seen, not the heard, not the thought. That's why he says, Tadva eda daksharam gargi adashtram dashtu asudam sotra amadam mantra avijnatam vijnatra na anyadagosti dashtu. Means there is no other seer, న్యదోస్తుంది శ్రోత్ర నన్యత దోస్తి మంత్ర దేర్ ఇస్ నో అదర్ థింక్ యు ఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు థింక్ బికాస్ దిస్ ఆత్మన్ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ యు ఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు హియర్ బికాస్ దిస్ ఆత్మన్ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ us బికాస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ద ఇమ్మనెంట్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ విచ్ ఇస్ విత్ ఇన్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ us ఇస్ ఆల్సో ఓమ్నిప్రెసెంట్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ సో యట్ విల్ కంటిన్యూస్ దిస్ డిస్కషన్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ది మోస్ట్ గ్లోరియస్ డైలాగ్స్ ఇన్ ది ఉపనిషద్ లిటరేచర్ సో విత్ ఇన్ ఎ వెరీ వెరీ షార్ట్ టైం ఇట్స్ వెరీ వెరీ లిమిటెడ్ inadequate, it's a very long chapter. Third chapter is very long and this Brahmanam is also very important, quite long. So I just tried to give you a very very superficial understanding. Shankaracharya's commentaries on these Brahmanams are very celebrated, highly metaphysical, if we don't have time right now to refer to. So thank you. Now you can have some interaction and discussion. Yes, you want to ask?
Yes. From your beautiful background information on these philosophical dialogues, it almost seems as though they're the core of a method of discernment in the Vedanta. For example, going from the gross to the subtle,
yes.
What we would call a vichara. And also, this process, it is not this, not this. A method of meditation. For example, what Ramana Maharshi used when his methodology of asking the three questions, going the three stages, Koham, who am I? Soham, I am he. And Naham, I am not anything perceptible. Can you talk a little bit about how these dialogues may have inspired the spiritual practices within the Vedanta?
Hmm.
Or was it the other way?
Yeah. No. Whatever Ramana Maharshi taught has come from the Upanishads. There is nothing in his teaching which is not from the Upanishads. When you read Ramana Maharshi, you have to remember, Ramana Maharshi approaches the topic from the top, from the conclusion. The Upanishads find the whole methodology is given. So when Ramana Maharshi has questioned, who am I? Know myself, nor know yourself. This, once you approach the subject from the conclusion point of view, then there is no scope for this kind of discussion. Here Yajnavalkya says, see, look at the mountains, skies and valleys, look at the seasons, time, sun and moon, there is an inherent regulated principle according to which they function, they exist. Don't you see there should be a higher spiritual principle behind the function of this cosmic phenomena? So, Yajnavalkya takes you from effect to cause, as you call it, from gross to subtle. Subtle is the cause, gross the effect. Look at the earth, look at the sky, look at the natural phenomena, and you turn your inquiry inward, you find that this nature itself can teach you what lies in your niche. Ramana Maharshi, on the other hand, he starts the inquiry from the top. Know yourself. Know ours. What is knowledge? Who am I? Or who are you? Depending upon the context. Once we know our true nature, then everything becomes known. So, Ramana Maharshi he must have practiced a lot of yoga and meditation in previous lives. The next life, he had already acquired much of this knowledge and he started there. But Yajnavalkya method is different. Ramana Maharshi doesn't refer to the effects or the growth. He starts from the conclusion. But Shankaracharya, when he wrote these commentaries, he was like a big ship where he had to take all kinds of passengers, ticketless passengers also. The beginners also, first class, business class passengers also. So you have to take across the sky. Ramana Maharshi, on the other hand, who was a goat, which, I mean, spiritual seekers belong in a particular trend of thought. Ramana Maharshi took them across. But these Upanishads like a big ship. So that's why, if you read Upanishads, you find the genesis of bhakti, genesis of yoga, everything you find in Upanishads. So, the Ramana Maharshi took this conclusion aspect of the Upanishad philosophy. And he evolved his method of teaching. And it was appealing to a great many intellectuals. That was his method. You find many great spiritual teachers who come from time to time. They have their own approaches, their own methods. Different saints and sages who came from time to time. They have different approaches. But the great traditional teachers, acharyas, they on the other hand, they have to take the whole humanity into consideration. That's why Shankaracharya wrote the most beautiful sublime devotional poetry for devotees. He also developed the puja tradition, puja method, that is also his creation. He also renovated hundreds of temples all over India. And he wrote the most sublime philosophical commentaries. He had to do so much. See, look at Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna. Bhakti, jnana, they all can be accommodated there. So here, Yajnavalkya's method is distinct. Means, first of all, he says, this aksharam, this antaryami, is the inherent principle within us. It is also the inherent principle behind the entire cosmic existence. As inherent principle behind the entire cosmic existence, it regulates, it harmonizes the whole phenomena of existence and also life. Existence and also life. That's the idea. That's why two examples are given. Surya Chandramasu Dhyava Prithivyo means sun and moon, earth and celestial regions, they all exist because Yadha Siva Akshara Sepa Shasana Gaki, because of this Akshara Brahma. Then he also says, those who give donations, you see, Yadha Siva Akshara Sepa Shasana Gaki Dadado Manushyaka Prashamsandi. See, for example, says, see, the same, because of the same aksharam, see, people praise those who do charity, good things to others. So, existence and also functions of, day-to-day functions of human beings, both are founded on the existence, on the presidentship, the presiding deity, presiding principle of this aksharam. That's the comprehensiveness of.
Sometime I would teach at the Willard University in Waco, Texas.
Teaching yoga?
No, the philosophy. So, yoga teaching is different, but they have a world religion classes, and they sometimes invite the people from different religious scholars to come speak. But during that time, it was puzzling that even today's days and age, at Baylor University, they will still teach, instead of evolution, creation. And when I was researching, because I read my first Bible when I was in the 5th grade, and when I was reading the Old Testament, God created this first day, God created this second day, it was kind of puzzling. Coming to America, I started realizing that certain part of Christianity and majority part of Muslim religion, they did not evolve with the time. Now, when you are mentioning that Vedas are over 8,000 years old,
and you can say the same thing about Hindus also.
Okay,
they are, all of them are not evolved according to time. There are apparently unscientific, irrational belief systems among all communities.
So my question,
remember, all are not Vedantins.
So,
if you read Eckhart, Mr. Eckhart, you find many of his statements are almost like, I have not read, I don't know old German, I have to depend upon Rudolf Otto's translation of interpretation of Eckhartian philosophy. But I tell you, you should know that if you read Eckhart, you will find many of his statements almost like repetitions, the translations maybe into old German of Shankaracharya's statements, the Bhashyas. No. I'm talking Meister Eckhart, the great Christian theologian philosopher who lived in the 13th century. You should read all these. Without reading, we should not make statements that non-Hindu.
My point,
I want you to understand, there are very many great theologians. Not many, of course. Many of them were persecuted. Eckhart is a grand example. He was so Advaitic in his concepts, in his ideas. And many of his essays, for example, God, he speaks of the Godhead, which he goes beyond the Trinity. The Godhead, Supreme Godhead, is beyond description, beyond words. If anybody says he has understood the Supreme Godhead, he's wrong. So he also believes in the idea of complete identification with the absolute reality. So there are many great thinkers. I am familiar with the Christian theological mystical tradition, but not the Islamic, so I don't know much about it. So there are many such great theologians, thinkers, not all of them, of course, who are very rational, very scientific, and very close to Advaita in the philosophical concepts. Come, please.
My question is that Vedas existed long time ago. So did Shankaracharya, did he made it the evolutions within it, or did he, according to the time and place, he reinterpreted that? How do you see that?
Shankaracharya interpreted, he wrote commentaries on the Upanishads, not the whole Vedic literature. It was Yaska who made the first attempt, serious attempt to interpret the Vedic mantras, Rigvedic mantras. It's called Nirukta. Only about less than 500 Rigs or Veda mantras he took up for interpretation. Shankaracharya wrote commentaries on 10 of the most important Upanishads, which constitute the essence, the gist of Vedic philosophy. That's how they think. So his contribution is mostly through his interpretation of the great 10 great Upanishads.